Hello and welcome back to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Nuttall, and as ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur. So Aaron, how are you doing?
Doing very, very well, mate. Obviously today, some massive news coming out of my home county of Warwickshire. Sam Hain and his 59.78 career list day average have signed a two-year contract extension at Fortress Edgbaston, so that's absolutely massive news. Ollie Hannon-Dalby, Jake Lintott, bringing in Mark Robinson as the coach as well. Fantastic stuff from the Bears in 2021. I must admit, I feel like there's little bits of a reason to be optimistic. Still got the overseas players to come in as well. So, yeah, I was quite chuffed to pieces with that. And in terms of myself, in terms of today, yeah, a bit of a sore throat. I had to cover the IPL auction yesterday. 5.5 hours worth of talking about both Indian and overseas talent. So apologies if I sound a bit gruff today. But all in all, Joe, doing quite well. How about yourself, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Honestly, I didn't watch the IPL auction. Stuff like that doesn't really grip me. I just followed it on Twitter. So, yeah, just interested to see how much some players have bought for some pretty big money going around.
Did you see Chris Morris?
Obviously, I did see Chris Morris.
Former county
Chris. I thought that was a bit of a extortionate price, let's say, for Chris Morris. I mean, he's a good cricketer, but I don't think he's 2.5 million quid good. So, yeah, I think Maxi was worth every penny. And yeah, I think Jai Richardson as well. I think he was pretty good value for money. I think he's a good player, but yeah, Morris is a bit steep. But yeah, as you say, some actually county cricketers getting picked up. You know,
and
in terms of overseas players
as well.
Yeah,
Adam Rashid didn't get a contract. Alex Hales didn't get a contract. Jason
Roy didn't
contract. Yeah. Bit of a mixed day to be honest for the England boys. But Tom Curran, he had a decent payday, didn't he?
Yeah, it is a lot of money in the IPL. Mm. There is, but I guess enough of the IPL. Because this is the County Cricket Podcast. And we're also joined today by a special guest today. I'm delighted to welcome along Gloucestershire's Jack Taylor. So Jack, how are you doing?
All good, thanks, Joe. All good. Happy to be here.
Well, thanks for coming on, Jack. We really appreciate you joining us today. We have a lot of different things to be discussing. First, we're going to be discussing some of your earliest memories of cricket, growing up as well as with Gloucestershire, and then moving on to a little bit about your T20 captaincy. And then finally ending off with future aspirations and also your opinions on the new structure, which I think is always very interesting to hear how, county cricketers see the new structure. And then, of course, we'll be ending with teammates, which is not something we've done so often recently. Kind of moved away from that a little bit because we've not had any current players on. But it's good to get that back. And yeah, we'll obviously come to that at the end. So let's get straight into it then, I guess. With what is your first ever cricketing memory, playing or watching?
I've got so many cricket memories from when I was younger. So family's basically from a little village in Oxfordshire originally called Great Chew. My grandfather and dad were both the groundsmen there. So I just remember being up cricket field with my brother throughout the summer and we were just in the nets. I can't even think how old we would have been. We would have probably been 5 or 6, but I just remember just endless days. It felt like that's all we did. We were just in the nets playing and they were amazing times, like to be outside, active, playing cricket. Like, we absolutely loved it. Watching dad play on a weekend, all of that was just incredible. So they're sort of the main memories that stick with me from when I was really young. So cricket, I guess, has always been part of our life, huge, huge part. It's the sort of main sport that my family have always loved. And yeah, obviously myself and my younger brother, Matt, have obviously transferred into the professional game. So yeah.
Yeah, so quite a cricketing influence throughout your family. And as you say, I mean, literally you and your brother play professional cricket. So it's pretty big cricketing influence there. But from a professional side, was there anyone specifically who you kind of looked up to and idolised growing up? Was there anyone who really stuck out?
I guess Andrew Flintoff was a huge one. So you obviously look back 2005 Ashes and even before that, I was, 10 to 15, and he was someone you just watched on TV and were like, wow, he was the star of the show, center stage, you know, not always necessarily the most consistent batter or bowler, but he was a proper match winner. And that was something that I always sort of wanted to grow up and be that, to win games and just see him do that. And some of his celebrations when he'd take some of those incredible wickets was just like, wow, like how could you not want to be that? So domestically, I wasn't always involved with Gloucestershire initially. So I actually had a couple of years where I was on the Middlesex Academy. That was due to being involved in the Oxfordshire age group. So I went down that route and travelled to Middlesex a couple of times a week for a couple of years and got offered to move to Gloucestershire. And obviously I've been there for the last 15 years now.
Yeah, and of course we'll talk about that in due course. But before we do, I have to touch upon Freddie Flintoff, because I'll ask this to both of you. What do you say is your top one or top two moments of Freddie Flintoff?
I think the bowling, you know, the spells he bowled to Gilchrist was just, and I'm sure a lot of people are the same like that, just watching that, it was just, you're just in awe. Like, it was incredible. Like, two of the world's best players, they're different disciplines, you know, two of the biggest countries, a huge rivalry, just on each other like that. And it was just unbelievable. Like, I even still watch it. It pops up on YouTube and things. And you watch it and you're just like, wow, it just sends
shivers. Sky Sports Cricket Classics, yeah.
It's just like, you can't beat that. And unless you really appreciate cricket. You know, I've got a lot of friends that are outside that don't really get cricket and things like that. Just that just drives me to want to get those sort of feelings. Like, you see that and it's just like that, you can't beat that type of sporting rivalry, I guess.
Yeah. I'd just say some great battles there. I think for me, the two that stick in my mind, firstly, when he ran out Ponting in 2009, that was just class.
Yeah.
That was just quality. That was at the Oval, no? I think it was, wasn't it? The last test. I think that was his last ever test, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he ran him out. Yeah. That was, I mean, that kind of, what a way to almost bow out. I know that wasn't his last act in the game, but what a way to bow out.
Yeah.
You know,
and that was such a shame for me. Finales. I guess when I got a bit older and sort of even more into it, and he you know, he didn't probably play for as long as I would have liked. I'm sure he would have liked, like, he had his injury problems, and I'm sure we would have all wanted another 3 or 4 years of Freddie at the top of the game, because he was no better performer than anyone else out there.
No, absolutely not. And that kind of brings me on to my next most memorable time, which is when he was in finals day in 2014. He's actually a game Lancs ended up losing, but he got Ian Bell out, which is pretty sick. I mean, don't really speak about that game much because it's disappointing to lose.
Why not, Joe?
Final. But it was class that he got Ian Bell out, one of his old mates, of course, from playing with England. So, yeah, I'd say, again, that was a pretty pretty good, because that was one of his last games. That probably would have been his last game, I think. So that was a pretty special way to bow out, if you like, in terms of his actual on-field bowling. Obviously, it didn't quite work out in that day, but it is what it is.
Well, Joe, I was just about to ask. My memory evades me. How did that day actually end up panning out?
We should move on to the next question, shall we?
No, I'm happy staying on this one. Who did they play in the final in 2014, Joe?
Yeah, we won it the next year, didn't we? So,
yeah, but 2014, what a year that was. Winning our only T20 Blast trophy to date. Laurie Evans in the final, absolute beast. And then, of course, Chris Wokes at the end. Yeah, good times those in 2014 at the Fortress. And talking of county cricket then, Jack, what do you say were your first ever memories of county cricket in general? Because you mentioned there you're born in Oxfordshire. They play minor county cricket. You mentioned on the Off the Back Foot podcast as well, which is a fantastic podcast, I must admit. Just give them a quick shout out about the influence of Northants, Gloucestershire, Warwickshire, for example. But what's your first ever memory of county cricket in terms of playing or watching?
Funnily, obviously I mentioned those counties before that Oxfordshire was affiliated with, but from where we actually lived in West Oxfordshire, Cheltenham isn't too far away. So I do actually remember coming to the Cheltenham Festival and watching some of the List A games there. And when our actual coach now, Ian Harvey, was the overseas player at the club, I can't actually remember how old I was, but I remember sitting in the little stand we have outside the pavilion now. So having that as a memory is quite cool to obviously transfer that and to be able to go and play there. So I do remember that. That was probably as much county cricket as we watched. And then we actually did go to watch the first ever international T20. I remember that down at the Rose Bowl in 2005. I think it was 2005. And John Lewis was actually playing for England that day. Obviously, a Gloucestershire player that I ended up going on to play with. But they're sort of my earlier memories from going to watch live cricket.
Fair enough. And of course, Cheltenham. I have to give a bit of a mention to Cheltenham. It is an absolutely stunning ground, isn't it? And Jack, in your opinion, is it the best outground in England and Wales?
Absolutely. But I don't think, and I get there's, you know, I'm sure if you asked other club players from other clubs, you have a bit of, you know, personal bias, but it's the best cricket festival without a doubt. Like, we're so fortunate that we get to play 2 4-day games and 2 2020s there every year at the moment. Well, fingers crossed the schedule can plan out this year and we can do that. But it's incredible. We get such, it's such a small ground with so much character, and the atmosphere is just second to none. I think especially in the 4-day stuff, to have that atmosphere, which we don't get at Bristol, and you don't often get at any other grounds, is pretty special to play against. And I know a lot of the opposition teams look for that on the calendar and are looking forward to playing there too.
Absolutely. It is an incredible little outground. Joe, have you ever been to the Cheltenham Festival? Because if not, it is brilliant.
No, I've not. Maybe I should go one day. I guess the thing for me is it's like a long way to travel to not watch Lancs. So
exactly. Like, we don't often come up against Lancs.
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, if I was to go to, try to think of it, a near, maybe Scarborough, let's say, that's like Scarbados. A bit nearer. Yeah, like I've been to Scarborough, like, but not to watch a game, but I've just been there. Like, maybe I would consider going there to not watch Lancs because it's a little bit closer. But yeah, it's a long way to travel for me to not watch Lancs. So, but I mean, it's probably worth it. So,
or it is.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll have to go. Yeah,
absolutely.
Maybe one day I'll have to.
I watched Gloucestershire beat Middlesex there 2019 in the T20 Blast. Lovely day, absolutely lovely day. Yeah. Atmosphere fantastic. Gloucestershire fans, as always, very kind, very friendly. Know their cricket as well in Cheltenham. Very, very knowledgeable crowd.
Yeah, they do. North of the county, especially. They obviously, we're based down in Bristol, which is not actually in Gloucestershire, but we we've got a very loyal following up in Cheltenham. That's for sure. That's why I think we get such good support at the festival.
Mm. It is, and as I said, for those who haven't been, I do thoroughly recommend it. I mean, I'm a neutral in this. I didn't go down there really supporting anyone. I'm going to be honest. I did go down there to see AB de Villiers and he was injured. But
yeah, fair enough.
To be honest, was treated to a fantastic game of cricket. Miles was fantastic on that day.
Yeah.
Mujeeb Rahman as well. Got to see him, the wily Afghan off spinner. Yeah, yourself, Jack, were you playing? You were playing in that game, weren't you?
I was playing. I think I got a few towards the end. I think we just won. I think Tom Smith hit the last ball for 4.
Yes.
I've got a feeling. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, no, I got out just before the end, trying to get the glory and hit 6 to win, but didn't pan out.
Good.
I reckon it, AB had hit some bombs on some club grounds, wouldn't he? I reckon he would hit some big sixes.
Yeah, well, we were quite happy. I mean, obviously, you want to play against the best, but we were quite happy that he wasn't fit.
On that occasion, it's fine that he's not playing.
130 odd balls or something there. But, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It is a bit of a small ground, isn't it? And to be fair, so is Bristol, though. Like, Gloucestershire have got 2 relatively small grounds.
We do. Now with the development at the county ground in Bristol, the ground's obviously a lot smaller, but I think it's especially 2020, it's suited to how we play. I think Cheltenham actually, even though we've got quite a good record there, it probably actually doesn't suit in terms of the dimension of the ground, actually how we play, you know, playing a lot of pace off bowlers and things like that. But we just enjoy it anyway. But yeah, Bristol hitting towards the flats is tiny, which is great if you're a batsman, but some of the bowlers don't enjoy bowling for that end too much.
I can imagine. Yeah. Be a bit of a pain, wouldn't it? And I suppose, I mean, for the people who live there as well, got to be a bit careful.
The thing is, they love it. Like, I think if you're going to buy, if you know, you're going to buy full well-known, you're looking onto a cricket pitch, you're probably interested
probably
in sport
fan,
and you're not, you know, you're probably a cricket fan and going to actually enjoy it. So we actually, you know, on a Friday night, obviously prior to last year, the atmosphere is amazing because you've got people that, you know, they're full up on the communal balconies, on their own balconies. It's actually packed up there as well. So it's almost like another free layer of atmosphere.
Well, last year, yeah, I assume people were watching the cricket. You know, obviously there was no crowds.
Yeah.
But I
exactly. We still had people watching up there. But even like the international, so one of the guys actually owns a flat in there. So, you know, you've got that for when Bristol hosts the internationals. Like, that's brilliant. You've got, you know, international cricket on your front door.
You see, that's class.
Yeah, and you can have friends and family around,
We did that. I went around to one of the boys' houses a couple of years ago when England played Ireland there and just watched for a couple of hours. And it's a great view up there as well.
Easy.
Did you see England versus India by any chance?
No, 2018. I didn't.
Oh, no. I did. I had the pleasure of that. And Moeen Ali's.
I saw some on TV, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's the thing. Like, I'm a Warwickshire fan, but there is a bit of a connection with Gloucestershire. As I said, love Cheltenham, love Bristol as well.
Yeah.
It's a very small ground, but it means that you get quite close to the action as well. Like Virat Kohli fielding a few meters away. It's kind of, it's a bit surreal at times, I suppose. And that's what's quite good about the ground.
Yeah. I think that's even, you know, even if we get sort of 4,000 or 5,000 in for a T20, say, during the week, it still feels like there's a lot more people there because the ground isn't very big. Mm-hmm. You know, if you went to the Oval and played with 4,000, it would feel like there's no one there. So, well, I suppose they never have 4,000 there, do they? They usually have about 20. But it's a good, we love it. We talk a lot about it, having the home, you know, enjoying our fans as I'm sure every club does, but we do have a real good buzz down here.
Mm. Yeah. And as I said, I'd agree from personal experience. I do like Gloucestershire fans. They seem to know their cricket. As I said, very friendly as well. It's just the southwestern way, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And talking of Gloucestershire then, Jack, what were your first impressions of the County Cricket Club itself? Because you alluded to earlier the connection with Middlesex, and that got you almost in contact with Gloucestershire. But what were your first impressions of Bristol, for example? What did you make of the club itself?
So when I first joined in 2007, the ground itself looked so different. We had the old pavilion that was, I've got no idea how old it was, but old, awesome. Dated. We had the Jessup stand, which was quite an imposing stand, which stuck out like a sore thumb. The flats weren't there. So it was quite old school. But again, as a young 15, 16-year-old, I didn't really care about that sort of stuff. I was just being able to train with the academy, you know, be around some of the pro, like senior pros that we had at that time, guys like John Lewis, Chris Taylor, all of these sort of guys. I was just almost in awe and just trying to soak it up. And as I've grown up and become a bigger part of the squad, I guess the ground and the club's changed hugely. It's a great place to go in and work now. It's not, you know, I guess in England you've got the test grounds and then you've got the non-test grounds. And we almost feel, obviously it's not a test ground, but we're pretty close to in terms of the facilities we've actually got. We've got amazing sports hall, incredible gym. Like, the ground looks good now. It's modern, it's updated, and it's all, you know, moved with the times, if you like, which it didn't 10 years ago. So I think that's credit to the club. Like, it's an enjoyable place to play. And we say it as a group of guys, we love playing there. So it's changed a lot in a good way.
Definitely. It's a lovely ground. And it does host international cricket for a reason, because although it is small, yeah, it is quite an enclosed ground per se. It's not exactly an Edgbaston or an Old Trafford or Lord's, for example. But it is a lovely ground. It is a lovely ground. And I don't want to sound like the Gloucestershire Tourism Board or the Bristol Tourism Board, but my word, I do like watching cricket there, and I miss it. Mm. I miss going down to Gloucestershire because it's not tremendous miles away. I mean, I live in Warwickshire. It's basically just a train journey down to Cheltenham and then to Bristol, Temple, Meads. But my goodness, it is a lovely place to watch cricket. Mm. I imagine to play it as well. It must be very nice in the sun.
Yeah, no, it is. It's great. And it's in a good part of town as well. You know, people know Bristol. It's in a nice area, which helps. And we get we obviously got the international game coming this year, and they put the temporary stands in. And we get the opportunity. They usually coincide the game we play against Somerset with that. So we have bigger, I think we can have 15,000. And, you know, on that ground, that feels like
a good size crowd
sort of thing. Like, that's, you know, that's a proper crowd for a small ground. So we've had that experience a few times over the last year, and I think, well, COVID depending, I doubt we're going to have a full crowds, but it's going to feel like that this year, hopefully, with some sort of crowds.
And that's the thing though, because we've all missed cricket so much. I mean, my last game, I still remember the exact date, and I remember it because Dom Sibley got his England call up on that day, 23rd of September 2019, pretty rainy day one, Yorkshire versus Warwickshire at Edgbaston. We're getting absolutely trounced by Tom Coder-Cadmore, and yeah, didn't realise that walking out the gates from the Hollies, that'd be the last game for like a year. Yeah.
And it's been a long year and a half, hasn't it? It's felt
it has, like, hasn't it?
Three it's probably felt like 3 years. It's crazy.
It has, but you know what? You've got to look at the light at the end of the tunnel, haven't you? There's optimism, there's reasons to be hopeful, and yeah, we just got to keep plodding on and ploughing through, I suppose. But talking of your time at Gloucestershire then, Jack, what do you say has been your real highlight? I mean, I can think of one game in particular which has really defined your career during your time at Bristol. But what do you say has been your highlight from a personal perspective with Gloucestershire?
I think, and I'm sure if you asked everyone that played that Lord's final in 2015, you'd probably have the same answer. But yeah, it, without a doubt, like the whole build-up of that competition and the way we won some games which we should never have won, and we were pretty much written off the whole, as a one-man team behind Michael Klinger, the whole competition. So that day and how it panned out with him actually getting out third ball and us sort of staring down the barrel, the ebbs and flows of that game, and then actually winning that game was just incredible. And I don't think we want that feeling again. And I think if we were to win another trophy, obviously it would be amazing, but I still don't think it would pan out as it did on that day.
Mm. Well, it was 11 years, wasn't it? 2004, you'd won.
Yeah.
Was it the C&G trophy? Was that the...
Yeah. Yeah, they had that was sort of the end of the period where Gloucestershire won, I think, 6 trophies in 5 years. Mm. So, yeah, it was a long time and we had a big transition. We, John Bracewell, who was coach at the time when I sort of first moved on to professional staff in 2009, was like, look, we're going to develop a squad. And we were a young squad then and we could sort of hide behind that. And I guess it got to the point that 2015 was a turning point where we were a young squad in terms of age, but we'd all played quite a lot of games at that point. And to obviously win something, you know, was amazing.
Oh, yeah, I bet. And against Surrey as well, because I know what you're talking about with regards to being written off, because the exact same thing happened to us in 2016 when we won the Royal London One Day Cup at Lords. The fact is, all the media attention was on Surrey. And then it was almost like, okay, we'll dedicate a little bit of time to the other team. But yeah, it was an incredible final. It really was. We spoke to David Payne about it. And of course, it's funny that we've had both of you here on the podcast, because that's the dynamic duo which ended up winning the trophy, I suppose, for Gloucestershire with that fantastic catch at deep square leg. So Jack, what were you feeling ahead of that game? What emotions, what was going through your mind before that Lords final against Surrey?
I think the day before... we had a four-day game at Kent the week before, and it was always our four-day season for us was done. We weren't going to win anything, and it was miserable weather. And I think a lot of us were just worried about not getting injured. Like we played a few overs at Kent, and we were like, we didn't want to get injured, and had it in the back of our minds. And then the game actually got called off, and we only played about I think 80 overs in the whole match. And we went straight from there to Lords, and we had a couple of days in London before. Which we like having a London trip. It doesn't always happen.
Trying
to embrace it. Yeah, we'd go around like tourists, like we don't get to London at all. And we went the day before and trained and sort of got in the dressing room and it sort of sunk in. You're like, wow, this is going to be pretty special. And Richard Dawson and Michael Klinger spoke to us before the game and they were like, look, boys, just, you know, we pulled it out of the bag like this season, just in the group games and the knockouts, like, from positions we never should have done. Let's just go out and enjoy it. And I'm sure that's the cliche, just go and enjoy it. And we did do that. And I think just how it panned out, we came in at the halfway interval, what we got 220, and you're sort of trying to keep positive, even though deep down we were like, we haven't got enough here. You look down Surrey's lineup and they bat deep and they've got experience. And we were like, I think you had in the back of your mind, no, probably haven't quite done it, but we're going to go out and just enjoy it anyway. And we actually bowled really well. We almost bowled the perfect game, really. And we weren't quite getting any luck when Sangakkara and Burns are in. And I think they needed 75 off 20 overs with 9 wickets left. And I mean, I don't know what the odds would be, but you're not probably winning many games of that with 2 batsmen set on 50. And just for it to pan out, it almost felt, as the wickets were tumbling, it almost felt like it was meant to be.
Mm. Well, yeah, of course. And it was an incredibly memorable final. And we need to go a bit more in depth because it was such a special day for Gloucestershire fans. But you mentioned there about the midway interval. And when we spoke to David Payne, of course, he had a bit of a strange dismissal, to say the least, with regards to Jade Dernbach's hat-trick ball.
Yeah.
So, Jack, looking back on that, I know it was around 5.5, 6 years ago, was David out?
No, we were pretty spewing at the time because obviously I think it was a hat trick as well. And I think part of that, I'm not saying that, I think part of that and the crowd, it sort of probably made the decision, if you know what I mean. But I think it was more disappointment that we didn't actually bat our 50 overs. Like that was the whole thing we talked about when we were losing wickets. It's like, let's make sure we use every ball, even though, you know, let's just give ourselves a chance to get something. And I think we left 2.5 overs out there or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it wasn't out, and it's easy to look back in hindsight, but I think, you know, until you're in that position, it may have, I think it actually looked out more out real time than it did when it was slowed down. So I can understand how it was given, but again, it's one of those, you just hope it doesn't happen. But it didn't actually matter in the end anyway.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's the important thing.
But... I guess it made for a good story, didn't it?
Oh, well, yeah. Exactly. Like, there was so much of it. You know, have someone get 6 wickets and a hat-trick and end up on the losing side and all that sort of stuff.
And the leave itself, let's not forget. We spoke to David about it.
I don't know what he was thinking. I actually haven't asked him, to be honest. He probably knows more than I do.
Well, he said that he thought it was going to be almost like a Beamer kind of thing.
So yeah, like a head high. Right.
And then it just continually dipped. Oh my goodness. For those who haven't watched it, do watch it. I mean, David, fantastic player. And of course, he ended up winning the final for you. We'll touch upon that as well. Yeah. But then with regards to Surrey's innings then, because you mentioned 220 runs, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to win a Lords final with that many runs on the board. Obviously, I know that as a Warwickshire fan, 2014. But with regards to the bowling approach, because Sangakkara and Burns, they were motoring along, both in their 50s. I think Roy Burns was on 56, Sangakkara's on 60. What a player Sangakkara was, by the way, as well. What was your bowling plan when you were actually going against those guys? Was there any particular game plan or tactics that you looked to employ against those two set batsmen?
I think initially we went hard early with James Fuller and David Payne, which they were incredible that year. Like, they were probably two of the best new ball bowlers in white ball cricket. And they, you know, we could have had them 4 down almost in the first 10 overs. I think we only had them 1 down. Mm-hmm. But they had bowled amazingly well, kept it tight. And even with 220, we felt like we could get a little bit of scoreboard pressure in terms of the run rate. And then I think Maxi just tried to juggle the bowlers when they had that set partnership. I didn't quite get it right my first spell, actually, bowling. And then we switched ends and it seemed to just click. I obviously bowled probably the worst ball I've ever bowled to Sangakkara to get him out. But still don't quite know how he only hit it to mid on. But and then it just, yeah. And then after that, it just then seemed to start spinning. Like, I had Burns stumped and then Tom Smith, I think he had Azam Mahmood stumped at one point. And it just, and then it looked like the pressure was on them. And we always knew with the attack, and we always say it, we always have a Gloucestershire squeeze. And we just kept going with that. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was an incredible, incredible comeback from Gloucestershire. It really was. And that really sparked the collapse, wasn't it? The wicket of Sangakkara. Burns fell shortly afterwards. You also picked up a third one, which was Tom Curran, who earlier on in the day as well, you'd absolutely pumped to the boundary on a couple of occasions. Two big sixes from 4 tosses. So had a decent day against Tom Curran on that particular day at Lords, didn't you, Jack?
Yeah, it was just one of those, to be honest. I think you got to put batting-wise, there was a short boundary leg side from that end, and I just spoke to Garrett Jones. I was like, I'm going to just try and take it down this end and just try and hit a few boundaries because we needed to just get as many runs as we can.
Well, yeah, I suppose it's all you can do, isn't it, in that situation. Got to try and inject some impetus into the innings when it's faltering a little bit. And then, of course, we have to go to that final over. Okay, and before we talk about the catch, what was going through your head? Because David Payne, obviously, is bowling. He is one of, as you said, one of the best white ball bowlers in the country at that point. Were you confident that he could defend that against Sam Curran and the Surrey Tail?
Yeah, do you know what? I think it was probably, I think when Burke got run out, and that might have been 7 or 8 down, that I genuinely thought, oh, we can win this. I think until then, you just like, look, keep ourselves in the hunt, keep trying to take wickets. So I think when it got to the start of that last over, obviously Sam Curran had batted like incredibly well. You know, I think it was 17 or 16 at that age. And you're like, wow, this kid's special. But I always just felt that the pressure was going to be too much. I even though they only needed 7 or 8 off the last over, I just felt like we were always going to be in with a sniff. And then obviously he hit, I think the first ball, down Benny's throat at mid on, and Benny doesn't drop many catches. So when that was in the air, I was pretty sure he was going to take it, which he did, although he said he didn't see it. But I'm not sure I believe that.
I reckon he just said that to make it seem more impressive.
I think he's like that. I didn't see it until it was like 10 meters away. I was like, okay, yeah, sure. And then once Batty and Dern back were out there, I just felt like Payne was just going to be able to do it. The wicket was holding in, and Payne's off cutter is one of his strongest balls, and I just felt like it would be tough. I think it'd be tough even for an in batter to just come and hit a boundary and finish it off with a soft ball. So yeah, it was, you know, I was backing him in big time because he had done it throughout the competition.
Well, yeah, and of course, he's a fine death bowler still to this day, David Payne. Love watching him charge in. Had a fantastic T20 blast in 2020 and a solid bloke as well. Was a fantastic guest here on the County Cricket Podcast. And then, of course, it comes down to that final wicket. Now, Jack, in that moment, what were you thinking as that ball is looping up in the air, coming towards you? That is the moment, first trophy in 11 years. Was there no any pressure. Doubt creeping in your mind there? Was there any kind of thoughts going, oh, dear, I'd better not drop this?
Do you know what? Because it happened so quickly, I don't think I really had time to. But looking back and realising how close I was to the boundary, it gives me, like, still to this day, it gives me, you know, shivers. I take a massive step back after taking the catch and I'm close to the boundary. And if I'd have done that and stood on the rope, like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what would have happened, but it's, yeah. And it just stuck and I didn't really know what to do. Like, we just sort of ran around like headless chickens. Like, we only probably thought 2 or 3 minutes before that whether we could actually win after the 7 hours of cricket. So yeah, it was just, it was an incredible feeling. Like, I think it's going to be pretty tough to get that again. Even if we were to win another trophy, because I just don't think it would happen in that way.
Hmm. Well, yeah, it was incredibly special, wasn't it? And I suppose the weight made it that even more special for Gloucestershire fans. Mm. And you mentioned there about the celebration. Yeah, what was going on with your personal celebration, Jack? Because it started off as like the airplane, then some fist pumps, then all sorts.
Yeah, exactly. I've got no idea. I sort of crouched down and sort of, I don't even know, cheered, if you like, and then ran. And then sort of everyone was running in different directions. And we ended up running to the sort of Gloucestershire fans in the corner who had been singing all day. Like, I think, you know, you wouldn't have known there were any Surrey fans in there because you couldn't hear them over the Gloucestershire fans. And yeah, we didn't know what to do because we'd never, most of us had never won anything. So it was, yeah, it was very special.
Yeah, I mean, arguably that was one of Gloucestershire's best ever days of cricket, like best ever, yeah, days of cricket in the history. Would you say it's up there? I mean, obviously for you, it's going to be the number one in your career, but overall for Gloucestershire, would you say that's the number one?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, I think it was more because we weren't really expected to win.
In the circumstances, obviously, yeah.
When they won, and even with the squad we had, like when they won in all those six trophies in the 5 years, sort of across the turn of the century, they had a gun side together. Ian Harvey, Mark Alleyne, John Lewis, Mike Smith, all these guys, like seasoned white ball, like one day cricket specialists. And that's not taking anything away from them because what they did was pretty incredible. And I think the frustrating thing for us is not winning something since, because we feel as a squad that we've got the tools to do that. And, you know, that's something we want to put right this year, definitely.
Yeah, well, I mean, only time will tell, but we, of course, wish you the best of luck. Just not against Lancs.
You always say that and never Warwickshire. Why not Warwickshire, Joe?
Because, hey, if Warwickshire lose, it doesn't bother me. Only way I want Warwickshire to win is if it means Lancs need Warwickshire to win. Either way, doesn't bother me. But yeah, as I say, we do wish you the best of luck, of course. But let's kind of flip the podcast on its head a bit now, almost, and talk about some tougher moments that you've had at Gloucester. Because obviously that's like a real high. That's probably your highest point of your time at Gloucester. But what would you say the toughest moment you've had with Gloucester has been?
Well, I think I've spoken about them before. I've had three bowling bans over the past, 8 years now. So I think my first one was in 2013. And that was probably the one that hit me the hardest. Just purely down to the fact that at that stage in my career, I was an off spinner that could bat. I hadn't sort of nailed my spot down in any of the three formats at that point. I played more white ball cricket than I had 4 day cricket. That was a dark time to basically say you're cheating as a 22-year-old trying to make your way in the game is pretty tough to take. It wasn't anything that I was trying to do to gain an advantage. It was just my natural bowling action. And that, I think, for me, was the hardest thing to sort of get over. And especially when you sort of see, I was quite bitter at that point. I used to see other people with questionable action sort of getting away with it. And I was like, well, why me almost? That was tough. And each time I came back for it and I was able to I was able to pass the test effectively, but it just then happened that I would sort of revert back to typing competitions. And I always knew, like, I'm not disillusioned at all. Like, I always knew that I had a different action. You know, my arm wasn't straight. Like, I knew that. And it looked worse when I got tired. And it just got to the point after. I got back and I got back bowling. And then I was worrying about it, as opposed to actually trying to worry about getting the batsman out. I was worried about what's the umpire thinking, what's the opposition thinking. Like, and that's not a good place to be. And I think the final sort of straw was when I got banned for the third time in 2017, I think it was, or 18. I can't remember which one. It was at Worcester away. And I'd previously done a bowling test about 10 days before, and the results usually take about 10 days to come through. We played a four-day game, and we chased down 350 on the last day, and I ended up 100 not out with Michael Klinger, who also got 100, came off the field, and then sort of once it all settled down, Dawson came over and told me, he was like, you've been banned again. And that, just for me, like, I was like, I'm done. I'm done bowling off spin. Like, I don't have any enjoyment doing it anymore. Like, I'd got, you know, luckily I got to a point where I was scoring runs to play as a batsman in all formats. So I'd sort of turned my career around in that way, if you'd like. And I just like, I'm not bowling off spin. So basically took a few months off of sort of just reflecting, and I actually won Batsman of the Year at the club that year, which sort of was something quite sweet, because I'd scored a lot of runs across all the formats, which was nice. And then, yes, going on from that, I'm developing leg spin, which is a work in progress, which I've been doing for the past 2.5 years. And yeah, that's an ambition. I want it as a, you know, to come back and be able to bowl in professional cricket as a leg spinner.
So you're going to be back, basically what you're saying. Mm.
Yeah. It's not, I've been working on it and it's still a work in progress, but I sort of set myself a couple of years ago, like a 3-year plan. So I want to be, by next season, 2022, I want to be a bowling option for us. So that is, yeah, that's where we're at now.
Wait, we need
come full circle, really.
Yeah, we need to discuss this for a second. So you've gone from off spin into leg spin. First of all,
yeah,
why leg spin? Where did that come from? Where was the inspiration from that?
Well,
per se?
It's the basically you can't throw a leg spinner, like it's impossible. So that it's simple as it sounds. Like that was a point at the start, and we were just like, look, let's just play around with it, see how it goes. And obviously, I've bowled my whole career. Like I've got the mentality of a bowler, and I get that leg spin is a completely different skill. But it was something that I just wanted to go with. Like I didn't at that stage just want to just be a batter for the rest of my career. I like being involved in the game. You know, you can contribute with both. Opportunities it can hopefully bring can be better. So, yeah, and it's something I've just committed to. And look, I'm not saying it's perfect yet, but it's got to a place where 2 years ago, it's not even close. Like, it's something I want to do. I think it's easy to come out and say, and just it get taken like, you know, see how it goes. But I want to do it just because it's sort of never happened in cricket before. I actually want to almost prove people that it can. And that's just sort of like an old school thought that, no, you can't. Why can't I do that? So it's going to be interesting and it's something that I'm still working towards.
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to be very, very interesting that. I mean, I wasn't expecting that, to be honest, because you've been obviously batting for Gloucestershire for the past 2-3 years as a specialist now.
Yeah.
So to hear that, that's very, very interesting. And of course, Joe, one of your favourite players right now, Marnus Labuschagne, exact same in that way. Batsman who bowls his leg spin, pretty handy leg spinner, to be fair, Marnus. Gets quite a few wickets across formats. So in terms
of... definitely. And we played him a couple of years ago and he's got to a point where he's a decent leg spinner. Like, and that's what I want to get to is I can, you know, in a white ball team, I can be the fifth, sixth bowler. I'm not thinking I'm going to be the next Rashid Khan, but
you never know.
Yeah, you never know.
So, have you tried bowling leg spin in like a practice? Well, not like in a match environment, like maybe in a practice.
Yeah, so
match.
I bowled for the past two. Obviously, last season it scuppered things in terms of development, but I've bowled in club cricket, second team games. I bowled in one first team game last year actually when the game was done. So. It's just a case now moving forward, I'm I need to bowl in club cricket and some second team games when the fixtures allow this year to get some match practice up that I can get to a point where it's ready to bowl in first team cricket.
Well, that'll be interesting to see. Very, very interesting. And in terms of variations, what variations do you possess, Jack? Guessing, obviously, your standard leg break. And have you got a top spinner, Rongan?
Yeah, I'm playing around at the moment with the googly, but I think the main thing for me was to have a good enough stop ball that can do a job. And I think that's a huge priority. And then natural variation, a lot of leg spinners rely on that anyway. I'm not gonna try and like bowl googly, flippers, sliders, all of these. If I can get a strong enough leg break, that will do me fine.
Box of tricks.
I was going to ask about the flipper, to be fair. You're not tempted to even give that a go, as Shane Warne always
said?
The
thing is, I've given it a go, and I've bowled a couple, and some of them come out really nicely, but then I'm like, I've just got no feel for it. So it's not like, I don't think it's something that I'm going to prioritise at the moment. Maybe in a few years.
Fair enough. I was about to say, because Shane Warne, for anyone who's watched the video on YouTube of him, the Shane Warne leg spin masterclass, is funny when he goes on about the flipper, and he says you just click your fingers. And it sounds so easy, and then you try that.
Easy
for
him.
Yeah, exactly. You're Shane Warne, 708 test wickets, mate. But when you're a club cricketer or a village cricketer and you try and click your fingers like that, ends up either going like a beamer, ends up on the roof of the nets, ends up in someone's garden. Yeah. Like, it's a very, very difficult delivery to control. Very, very hard. And I say that from experience and a lot of lost cricket balls. So it happens when an off spinner tries leg spin. That's why I was interested, Jack, because I myself am an off spinner. So for me, I quite like the art of off-spin bowling, but leg spin's very interesting.
Yeah, and just like, I think it boils down to the fact that I couldn't get to the point where I could bowl with a straight arm effectively, like in a match. So I just lost all enjoyment. And I think leg spin, with the way the game's going, especially short format cricket, like leg spin, a part-time leg spinner can be like gold dust. And moving forward, I want to try and crack into the franchise circuit, the 100 and all those sorts of things. And I think if I can be an option with the ball again, like, that will make me more valuable than just being a batsman.
100%. It's about being adaptable and being versatile, in particular nowadays, because you mentioned franchise cricket, IPL, Big Bash, PSL, CPL, for example. These teams are looking for really three-dimensional players. And if you can just add that extra string to your bow, makes you a bit more valuable, makes you a bit more tempting to franchises. And yeah, we mentioned Marnus. Joe Denley's another one with his leg spin. We've seen an action in Test cricket, seen it on multiple occasions for Kent as well. Yeah, it's an interesting facet of your game to implement, really, and improve upon. Should be interesting. I look forward to seeing that. Obviously, hopefully not against Warwickshire. yeah, should be an interesting, obviously, avenue to go down. And talking of bowlers then, Jack, who would you say is the toughest bowler that you've ever faced in county cricket? Is there anyone who really stands out? Anyone in particular that you, I don't know, almost fearful of, per se?
I mean, probably going to be quite obvious, a couple of them. I think in white ball cricket, Jofra Archer is obviously, from where I bat in 2020 cricket, like coming in towards the end trying to hit, and he just doesn't give you anything to hit. Like, I think
everything at your feet.
Yeah, everything's at your feet and you just can't get under it. And I was like, well, I don't really, because I don't particularly play a paddle or anything. I was like, I haven't got too many options here. And then Red Bull cricket, Darren Stevens is just
the king.
Horrible to face. He's just, you know, and most people that aren't involved with professional cricket probably look from the outside and like, well, you know, he doesn't look like much like different to a club bowler, but he's got such good control and such good skills, and it obviously comes down slower than most other bowlers. It's just so awkward and horrible. So they're probably my two least favourite to face.
I mean, both obviously in their own right, very different in terms of speed. I don't think they'd be matching for speed there with regards to Darren Stevens. Joe, I have a question for you as a follow-up to that. If you had to, choose Jofra Archer or Darren Stevens to face, hear me out, to survive for six balls, last wicket for Lancashire, you're going to win Division One, basically. Okay, you're the last man standing, and you have to face six balls of Jofra or six balls of Darren Stevens in the county championship. Let's say the new ball's been taken as well. Let's make it interesting. Shiny new Jukes. Who do you take on and why?
I'm trying to think here. Like, I reckon, I mean, the thing that I think Jofra will get me out the most with is a Yorker. So I would just have to hope he don't bowl a Yorker and then just bat that I'm just going to hit it. So I reckon I would probably take Jofra there. Also, I really want to face Jofra. That would be so fun. Like, looking back on it, that would be so fun. So I would probably say Jofra all day long. It's a hard choice, though.
Of course it is. Yeah. Both very different bowlers. I mean, Darren Stevens, obviously the wily Mr. County Cricket himself, the wily character, the experienced head, and then Jofra, who's the speed demon, who's an absolute gun bowler across all three formats. Jack, as I said, I do want to ask that to you as well. Let's say your last man standing, who are you taking on?
Well, if it's in a four-day game, I'm probably reluctantly taking on Jofra, because I think Stevens is going to... he's going to have the stumps in play every ball, although Jofra probably is as well. So I don't know. I'll probably regret saying that, but
who knows? Maybe we'll get to find out this season.
It is incredible, though.
We'll get to find out.
The reputation that surrounds Darren Stevens when you've got Jofra Archer, who's steaming in for England at the moment. And yet you're not alone there, Jack. I mean, we've had plenty of batsmen, all-rounders, tail-enders as well, come on to this podcast and say that they absolutely hate facing him because he's got this real reputation as being a bona fide wicket-taking option. And it's not a matter of him being ridiculously quick. He's not going to take your head off, for example. But it's almost that, unnerving nature of his bowling. It's the feeling, it's that fear of what's the next delivery going to be? Is he going to trap me on the pads? Is he going to catch my outside edge? Am I going to go into a shot and mistime it? There's just a real, there's an allure to his game, isn't there? And for us as county cricket fans, it is brilliant to see Steve-O in the county championship. It really is. And the guy's an absolute stalwart of county cricket, a legend of Kent cricket as well. Yeah. It's an interesting question there. And I'm glad that you both answered it. And you both said Jofra. Very interesting. Jofra. What about in terms of spinners though, Jack? Because 2011, wasn't it, when Matai Muralitharan, he was at Gloucestershire. Would you say he was one of the toughest ones? Obviously, he's on your same team, but you would have faced him in the nets. Who do you say was the toughest spinner that you faced so far?
In white ball cricket, facing Rashid Khan was a pretty huge challenge. I'm sure a lot of people have said the same. And then four-day cricket, we played Ashwin at Worcester a few years ago on a used wicket, and that was a challenge, but it was cool. Like I enjoyed it. Like he's obviously an absolute gun. Gets six wickets per test or whatever it is. And we rocked up there and it was an absolute bunsen. It looked like it had been used for about 10 days. And we were like, right, this is going to be fun. And he, I think he ended up taking about 9 wickets in the game, but that was a challenge.
Yeah, I can bet. Great bowler though, isn't he? Ravi Chandran Ashwin. And I look back to 2019, and one of my favourite recent county championship memories is the battle between him and Amar Verdi at Trent Bridge. It was absolutely extraordinary. Amar Verdi took 14 against Notts. Ashwin took 12. I mean, it was just an incredible battle of spin. It really was. For anyone listening to the podcast, go and search it up on YouTube. Thoroughly, thoroughly recommend watching the highlights of that for any young up-and-coming spinners. But enough about spin bowling and, I suppose, batting then, Jack. Let's talk a little bit about your captaincy then. Because this is a relatively new role for yourself at Gloucestershire County Cricket Club. How do you actually approach the captaincy role? Do you take, for example, with Gloucestershire, we mentioned earlier Michael Klinger. Do you almost take any influences from other people, other captains in and around the game per se? Or do you have your own real stamp that you put on your captaincy?
I think, it was a combination of both. Like, I'm aware that Maxi, has done some great stuff for the club. Like, he's been an absolute legend, in my eyes one of the best overseas players of the last 10 years in the game, I took some of his stuff, but there were also some things that I thought that I wanted to add as well and put my own style on it, and that wasn't to just tear it all up and do something completely different, and it was to continue, we've got predominantly the same squad, continue a few things but then just tweak a few things as well. Obviously, I've played under a few captains over the last few years, and you sort of pick things here and there about how you want to go about it. And look, it wasn't perfect last year, but I thoroughly enjoyed doing it. And it's something I'm just excited to continue with this year and hopefully beyond.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, it's a massive honour. I mean, how did you feel when you actually got the news that you're going to be the captain of Gloucestershire? Because you've been there for years now, and you've been there well over a decade in terms of your professional playing days. But how momentous of an occasion was that for you personally to be told you're going to lead Gloucestershire in the T20 Blast?
Yeah, look, it was incredible and it was an honour. Like, Dorse came and spoke to me before one of the Bob Willis Trophy games a few weeks before the competition and asked me if I wanted to do it, basically. And I bit his hand off. Like, I was over the moon. Like, as I said, it was an absolute honour. And it was something that, you know, I was aware there was a spot for someone to step up and do it. And I felt like I was the right person to do it. And not that I, you know, pushed anything on anyone, but just, you know, hope that I would get the opportunity to do it, and did get that opportunity. And it panned out really well. Like, some things I found challenging, more challenging than I probably thought, like having to leave players out, leave my brother out, without having any personal bias. But again, it's something I'm embraced, and I'm looking forward to it this year.
Of course, yeah. And it was a fantastic season for Gloucestershire last year. First finals day in years that you reached at Fortress Edgemaster. And of course, not in front of any crowds, unfortunately. That would have been an absolute spectacle to see Surrey, Notts fans, Lancashire fans and Gloucestershire fans at the Fortress. But looking back on 2020 as a whole, how would you assess that season? First of all, in a personal light and also from a team's perspective.
Personally, I didn't get anywhere near as many runs as I'd have liked. That was due to, just lack of form, but also the fact that the top order did so well. In previous years, I've come in earlier and had to affect games a bit more, and I didn't do that this year. But the top three, Chris Dent, Miles Hammond and Ian Cobain, had absolute storms and set it up for us. So didn't actually have a lot of work to do, to be honest. And obviously, from a team point of view, we had an amazing group stage. We won six on the bounce at one point and qualified for the quarterfinal, which we know we're good enough to do that on any given year. I think we've done it four out of the last five, got to the quarterfinal, but then just slipped up. And obviously to put in a dominating performance against a decent Northampton side, where we won easy by 8 wickets, and get to finals, that was great. But again, it was bittersweet. Like, we didn't perform anywhere like we wanted to on the day.
Yeah, it was a bit of a sad ending, wasn't it, for Gloucester?
Mm. Yeah, it was just the whole way it played out. You know, we would have loved to have played in front of crowds and not have all that rain and everything. And then had to get, stuck in on a wicket that had been undercover for 4 days. Not that that's any excuse, but we weren't going to know how it was going to play.
Yeah. Was it frustrating having had previous successes at Edgbaston that season?
That's cheeky.
Yeah, I think so. I think
that's true.
And part of it, to be honest, part of it is the fact that we didn't sum up the conditions quick enough.
No.
That's for sure. But we obviously played the 12 over match there against Birmingham earlier on and got 160. And we probably, we weren't expecting to go out there and get 160 again, but we probably thought we needed 120 or 110, when in fact 90 or 95 would have been enough. But that's partly our own fault.
Yeah, and I mean, credit to Surrey, their bowling up front was very, very good. Rhys Topley.
Yeah.
I mean, he was class at the top there. So, yeah, it was a weird... for me, it was a weird day of cricket watching it, but I guess for you, it was a weird weekend.
I think it just took a bit of the icing off it. I mean, it was amazing to be at finals day, but I said to all the guys afterwards, I was like, look, we've had a little taste of it now, even though it's not normally like that. Like, let's make sure we put it right and get back next year.
I think this year as well, qualification to get to the quarterfinals was even harder, because obviously in your group only two went through, like per group. And obviously it was the best two third place teams. Confused myself there, but yeah, I mean, it was even harder obviously to get through rather than it's normally four teams. You can kind of get a bit more lucky almost. I know that's happened to Lancs in the past. So yeah, I mean, I think every single side who got through to the quarters at least was very, very good. And I think honestly on that finals day, it was anyone's game. And it was just about what happened on the day. But yeah, it is what it is. And as I said earlier, there's always next season. And that's the good things about sport, I guess, is there's always another game, regardless of what happens. But speaking of next season then, let's take a little look at the county championship, because it has been totally restructured. Now, I mean, we've spoken through the structure enough on the County Cricket Podcast, so I won't go through it all again. But how do you feel personally about the new structure? Are you in favour of it, or do you prefer the traditional, two divisions? Only nine teams can win it, whereas everyone can win it this year. How do you feel about it?
Look, I think because we got promoted obviously to Division One 2 years ago, we all want to have a crack at playing in Division One, like without a doubt. Yeah. Like we haven't been in Division One for God knows how many years, and like Bob Willis Trophy was great, and it served its purpose for what needed to be. And obviously this year is set up the way it is because, you know, not sure how many crowds and how things are going to pan out. But ultimately, we are hugely in favour of playing a two-divisional system purely because we want to have a crack at playing in Division One. Like from a selfish point of view, we want to play in Division One, which we haven't done, which obviously is not happening this year. But again, we're just grateful to be able to hopefully go and play again, but we want to have a crack in Division One.
There is a pattern when it comes to, you know, the perspective.
Yeah, there is. Of people in favour of it. Normally, it's Division Two sides or Division Two players like this because they can win the county championship. But yeah, I mean, I'm in total agreement from a fan's perspective with you. Of course, with Lancs being promoted as well, you know, we've not played in Division One for a few years now in terms of, well, 2018 it would have been, or 2019. So, you know, we've not played in Division One for a few years, and it's been even longer for you in Northants. So, yeah, it must be frustrating, especially as a player. But what about Gloucestershire's group? Because it's actually, on paper, quite a competitive group. You're alongside Somerset, Hampshire, Surrey, Middlesex and Leicestershire. How many of those teams, you probably won't have played a lot of those teams for years in Red Bull cricket.
What are you thinking about that? Yeah, I mean, we've obviously played Leicester a lot over the last few years. We've played Surrey. Surrey were in Division One Division Two a few years ago. So we have played four-day cricket against them. I think Somerset's the only one we haven't played for years. Again, we've played Hampshire, but that was probably 6-7 years ago now, to be honest. So we have had success against all of those teams. But it's a tough group, and ultimately we want to play against the better, you know, the best teams. So we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a challenge, but we're looking forward to playing all of those teams and hopefully putting in a good show.
Yeah, absolutely, and hopefully, well, not hopefully, definitely will be a very, very competitive group. To be honest, I think all groups will. I think, I don't know how they sort of decided the groups or drew them. I don't know if it was random or they handpicked it. But I mean, you've obviously got a derby in there with Somerset, as we have with Yorkshire in Group Three. So I think all the groups have been well picked, and you know, I think the ECB has done a good job of making all the groups really competitive. So as I say, it's going to be very, very interesting. Yeah.
And derby days as well. Extra derby day. Let's face it, because for me, obviously, as a Warwickshire fan, Worcestershire, you know, usually Division Two, so should be nice to, you know, have the big boys to New Road for once. And then, of course, Gloucestershire versus Somerset, Lancashire versus Yorkshire. Of course, we'd love to go and attend the games.
Two Middlesex as well.
I know. I mean, there's loads, aren't there? Mm. It should be a really competitive...
That's actually one thing. Sussex and Hampshire aren't in the same group.
At least we have El Clasico in the T20 Blast, though. So
yeah, true.
Silver linings, I suppose, on that one. But yeah, should be a good season. Yeah. And we're all looking forward to it. There's less than 50 days to go now. April the 8th is the first one. How Fingers have the crossed. Team actually been preparing, Jack? Is there anything in specific ahead of that first game of the season?
So with what's been going on in the world, we didn't do a huge amount before Christmas. We were left up to our sort of own devices to keep fit. We probably had a week or 10 days worth of cricket before Christmas. And then since Christmas, we're back in 4 days a week. We have the lateral flow COVID test twice a week. We're ticking off our skills, doing our fitness now as much as we can do. Obviously it's all indoors. And I think in the hope that in a couple of weeks, the bowlers can start to get outdoors and do some longer run-up work.
With thermals on.
With thermals on, for sure, because it's still absolutely Baltic. And then I think we've got a pre-season game penciled in around the 20th of March. So we're, 4 weeks away from that. So we're, working towards that, and everyone's excited.
Yeah. I mean, let's hope, as I say, things can... the fixtures can be can go ahead of schedule. Obviously, whether fans can get in or not, that's a whole different debate. But fingers crossed, the fixtures can be as they're scheduled. And one thing I would like to ask actually is about pre-season tours, because obviously going abroad this year for a pre-season tour is not possible. I don't know where Gloucester normally go, but obviously going abroad this year is just not possible. I know Lancs have gone to Dubai quite a few years, and they were going to go to South Africa in 2020. So do you think I mean, every county's in the same boat with regards to not having a pre-season tour, but do you think that's going to affect your preparation for a full season?
Do you know what? I think it's going to probably affect some of the other clubs more than it is going to affect us, purely because we actually, in the last 10 years since I've been here, we've only been on one pre-season tour abroad. So that was in 2019. We went to La Manga for the first time. And obviously last year it wasn't possible and this year it's not possible. So I actually don't think it's not going to affect us.
Oh, like there you go. I did not realise that.
Yeah. So we sort of had a taste of going to La Manga, which we absolutely loved, and then haven't had it since. So yeah.
Is that where you were going to go last year?
We were going to go last year and again this year for 10 days and get some warm weather. But it's no different to us in any other year, really. So we're sort of as normal. I guess it's going might affect different teams because they're used to going away at this time of year, so I'm not sure.
Well, there you go. Yeah, there you go. And maybe it's more of a psychological thing as well, because realistically, you're just going to play cricket in a different country. So yeah, you're not going exactly. You're not going to acclimatise. You're just going to play cricket in a different country. Yeah. So it seems it would be more psychological, not being able to have maybe what they've used a proper preparation.
Yeah. I think hopefully we get a good. Hopefully we get good weather in March, so we can at least. Yeah. Get outside.
You need a heat wave around March time. Yeah. Around late March is a heat wave.
Yeah. Yeah, we do for sure.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting. But let's kind of move on then before we go into teammates, which of course is the final section. I've just got one more question. It's quite a broad question, and I reckon you've probably answered it in parts throughout the podcast. But overall, throughout the remainder of your county career, what do you want to achieve?
So there's a few things. I want to play for England in short format cricket. I'm well aware that I'm not that close at the moment. But if I can develop my leg spin and nail my finishing down in 2020, I actually think there's potentially that if there is a spot on the England batting lineup in short format cricket, it's a finisher's spot. So that would be one thing. But again, that's a three-year goal. I'm still only 29, so I think if you can have that ambition, you got to. Otherwise, you just sort of drift through. I want to crack the franchise circuit, and that's obviously included in the 100. I didn't get picked up initially in the 100, so that is another goal of mine. And then to lead Gloucester to a trophy, I think would be another goal as a team. A team goal. I want to win more trophies. Like winning one is amazing, but I want to win more. So I'd say they're my three main goals in terms of like pure outcome focused. And then under that is scoring more runs, scoring more hundreds. I'd like to score 15 first class hundreds, which I've got 7 at the moment. So I'd like to, if I could finish my career, you know, started my career as a number 8, number 9, and end up with 15 first class hundreds at the end, I'd be pretty happy with that. So,
yeah,
I think that would
be
nice.
And a double ton in there as well?
A double ton would be nice, yeah. It would be nice.
Well,
I got out of 99 enough. A couple of years ago, which really bugs me. So, I don't want that to happen again. Yeah.
Do you rather get out on 99 or be 99 not out?
I would rather be 99 not out because I got out on 99 and I wasn't happy.
Fair enough. Well, let's hope you never have to find out what it's like to be 99.
Yeah, true.
Because that would be very... Well, I mean, you might be one of the only players ever to be out on 99 and be 99 out in your career. So.
That's true.
Yeah,
there might be a few. Mm. It can't be too many, though.
No. Well, maybe that can make that your goal for this season, then. Try and get a 99 not out.
99 not out.
Jeez, I still don't think that'd be as bad as 199 like Faf. And now he's retired as well.
Oh. Now he's retired, yeah.
Gutting. Yeah, that would eat you out.
Well, maybe we'll see him back in county cricket soon. Who knows?
But yeah.
Throwing that out there.
Maybe we will.
It will be good. But yeah, that does pretty much wrap up today's main podcast. So before we do, of course, end things today, we have teammates to go to, which, as I said earlier, we've not done for absolutely ages, it feels like. I think we've done like one in the last like 7 or 8.
Yeah, there you go. That was it.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. So, Jack, are you familiar with how teammates works? Have you seen Soccer AM before?
Yeah, I have, but Aaron gave me a little rundown earlier on. So
right, cool.
Perfect.
Yeah, nice one. So we'll get straight into it then with the first question, which is in the Gloucester dressing room, who has the best nickname?
Oh, the best nickname. Ben Charlesworth has a nickname of Neil. Because he reminds us as Neil from the In-Betweeners. which is brilliant. And he absolutely hates it as well.
Does he?
I can't think why.
It is anyone at the in-between that you want to be compared to. It's not necessarily Neil, is it?
No, I don't think Neil would be copy left. Well, to be honest, I don't know if you want to be compared to any of them.
I don't really any of them, but Neil's like at the potentially at the bottom. So, yeah, fair enough.
Well, no, let's throw that out there, boys. I'll ask that question to you two. If you had to be compared to one of the in-betweeners, who would you want to be?
Oh,
you know what? I don't know. I really couldn't choose.
I reckon I want to be Will.
I reckon I want to be Simon. I reckon Simon's most normal.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's a hard one, though. It is a hard one. It is. Definitely not a Jay.
No.
Everyone knows a Jay, though. Everybody knows a Jay in their life.
Everybody knows a Jay, but you don't want to be him because he just lies all the time.
What a show. And I suppose, yeah, County Cricket Podcast, not just cricket here. We do have other knowledge. Moving on to our next question then, Jack. Who do you say is the teacher's pet at Gloucestershire? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Oh, teacher's pet. James Bracey. He likes to get his keeping throwdowns off the head coach.
That's now the second occasion. He's now been chosen. Yeah, David Payne said the exact same thing. To be fair,
he likes to pair up with coach.
James himself said as well, didn't he, Joe?
I think he might have done, yeah.
I think he chose himself as well.
Well, there you go. Must be right.
Fair play to him, though. I mean, look where he's at now. I mean, he's over in Ahmedabad, England.
Big time. He's
the world's biggest cricket stadium.
That looks pretty incredible, to be fair.
It's not Edgbaston, is it?
Edgbaston has 110,000 seats.
I'm telling you now, Joe, it may only have 25,000 seats. As soon as you walk into that gladiatorial arena for a Bears versus Pears match, it sounds like 200,000.
Hey, I'm not denying that, but it's no.
Are you sure it doesn't know? It only gets filled for finals day and internationals, doesn't it?
It does. That is true. It does. Unlike Old Trafford, that sells out every ground. Every game.
Just watch the highlights back. I mean, I was unfortunate enough to be there for this match when Moeen Ali absolutely clobbered our bowlers all over the place.
Yeah, but that's a Bears versus Bears match.
Yeah, fair enough. We've still had rising attendances ever since 2015.
That's not bad, but it's not breaking your record attendance every game. That's not a Roses game.
Yeah, but you make 2021/2022. Got Sam Hain. Absolutely clobbering bowlers all over the place. Easy.
We'll see.
Be a sellout.
We'll see. But anyway, back on to teammates. I went off in a bit of a tangent there. The next one. Who is the best at karaoke? And what is their song?
We've got bar myself, no one likes karaoke. I'm the only one that wants to get up and about, enjoy it. So, yeah.
So you, I don't,
well, I'm going to have to say myself. And I'll probably sing Robbie Williams' Angels. But, yeah.
Any particular reason?
There's no reason. I just sang it years ago, and it's just always been the go-to. But we don't often get to karaoke bar.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, not the worst choice. Better than the one that we had on the Ian Holland podcast, which was quite funny, with the Hampshire physio. For those who haven't listened to that, go and listen to it. It's definitely worth it. Moving on to our next one, then, Jack. Who's the team DJ at Gloucestershire?
David Payne. He thinks he's got the tunes. I'm not sure he does. I think he just goes on Spotify top 20, to be honest. But that's always that he seems to be the one that takes control of the music.
You can't go wrong with the charts, can you? So
no, you can't. He does.
That is literally what is popular at the moment.
It is, but it's always seems to be like Kiss 101. It's like the same five songs that always play.
Probably radio stations. I don't think radio stations have many people listen to them anymore. They just play the same songs. But yeah, next question. Now this applies to scoring 100, taking a wicket, anything like that, taking a catch. Who has the best celebration?
Graham Van Buren, when he takes a wicket, has got a good celebration because he's obviously only little, 5'2" or something, and he runs off and jumps probably twice his height. So that's quite a good one. Watching that's pretty decent.
Fair enough. He's been a very popular choice. James and David said GVB as well.
Because the rest of the boys are quite boring at appeals and celebrations, and he's obviously quite fun. He's like a little bunny rabbit and runs off and jumps in the air.
Jack, I've got a question for you, actually, with regards to celebrations. This is going to sound random. Can you do the worm?
Can I do the worm? No, I cannot do the worm.
Oh, I was going to say, we could have set something up there for 2021, or at least attempt it. If you get a century, take a catch, do it for us here at the County Cricket Podcast. Really unique.
All right, I'll see what I can do.
Fantastic. So yeah, for all the Gloucestershire fans out there, if you see Jack doing a really weird over-the-top celebration, you now know why.
In front of the Sky cameras.
Oh,
don't worry. If I get a wicket bowling leg spin, it's going to be an over-the-top celebration, that's for sure.
Good man. Moving on to our next one then. A bit of a new one, actually, here on the Carrick Cricket Podcast. Who would you say is the kit man's nightmare? Who leaves all of their kit around the dressing room?
Skipper, Chris Dent, his kit is a joke. He's got a corner spot. He's got the other corner spot from me, which is probably the best real estate in the changing room, but his kit seems to be everywhere. And he doesn't know where it is half the time. Yeah, they're the best. It's brilliant. You can see everyone. You've got your own space. But his kit is a disgrace. It's everywhere.
Well, fair enough. Maybe he needs to... maybe he should leave the corner spot then. Maybe he should be relegated from it. Someone else can take his place. The next one, bit of a two-parter for this one. Who's the best dressed and the worst dressed?
Payne, I don't want to give him best dress though, because I mean he dresses all right. We've got so many that dress awful. So we've got like Miles Hammond, Ben Charlesworth, George Hankins. These guys, I don't understand that sort of generation below me. Like they've got some of the worst clobber I've ever seen. Like Miles Hammond wears jeans that look like they're about 30 years too old and about four sizes too big. George Hankins has to buy every new Balenciaga or Dolce & Gabbana, I don't know, whatever they are. And then Ben Charlesworth, yeah, he looks like a lumberjack half the time. So they're shocking.
So, David, I mean, obviously David will take that.
I don't even know if I've got anyone that's good.
What about coaches?
Okay,
worse.
No, not our coaches, no, they got some of the worst. Head coach has got a pair of corduroys that he takes on every away trip. I haven't seen anything else. We haven't got any great ones. We're pretty standard, but there's some shocking ones.
Jack, you have to choose the best. Is it going to be David Payne?
I'm going to have to. No, I'm not. In fact, I'm not going to choose him. I'm going to choose Graham Van Buren. He's smart.
Well, there you go. You've just gone up in his estimations again after calling him 5'2". Moving on to our next one then. Who is the social media addict at Bristol? Who would you say is always on their Twitter, Instagram, for example?
Two, both of which, if you asked them 5 years ago, they would give anyone that used social media jip all the time. And now they've gone full circle and now they're actually the worst two. So it's Benny Howell and Chris Dent. They, you know, I remember about 5-6 years ago, I used to sort of get around Instagram and things a little bit. And they used to give me a lot of, wind me up a lot about it. And now they're just the absolute worst on it as well. So they're posting stupid videos and all sorts. So yeah, they're those two.
Fair enough. I mean, if they enjoy it now, then that's what they enjoy. I guess they do. I guess, to be honest, I guess lockdown will have made them even more active on social media as well.
No, it's fine. It's not. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just more the amount of stick they gave me about 5 years ago.
Yeah. Hypocrite a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
The penultimate one there. Who would you say the pro gamer is? Who's the best at computer games?
Oh, it's the it's got to be George Hankins. I'm assuming he's decent because he's on it all the time. He brings his PlayStation to away trips and he doesn't really socialise or eat with any of us. So he's plugged in playing with his other mates online. So I'm assuming he's pretty good. I'm not a big gamer myself.
No,
fair enough.
What if you could though, Jack? Let's say George has the PlayStation out. What game, if you could choose one?
Oh, I'll play FIFA. FIFA. I'm a big football fan, so I enjoy FIFA. I enjoy Call of Duty as well, but I just can't get it past the missus, to be honest. So there's no chance of me having a PlayStation.
I was going to say, that seems to be every cricketer's favourite right now, is Warzone. Mm. But obviously, Joffre.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you see everyone. Stokes, yeah. Broad, they're all playing it, aren't they?
Yeah,
it looks fine to be fair. I would love it, but just not allowed, unfortunately.
You have to buy a PlayStation and just leave it in the dressing room.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Or something like that, and then you can never know.
Yeah,
you can never know then.
Exactly. You could become like Ben Stokes, become a Twitch streamer.
Might not be the best investment.
What's the one that
opens
in a suitcase? Is that, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what it's called, but I've seen them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what George Hankins carry around. He brings that when we have coach trips, which is good fun.
Yeah, they're cool.
Like, it's like a briefcase thing.
Pretty sick.
Is that called a game box?
It might be. It's just literally, it's in the case, you open it up and it's there.
Yeah.
It's good.
Good fun.
yeah, as Joe said, would be a decent investment, that, for an away day, especially in the current championship, 4 days. So our final one, and this is always a contentious one here on the County Cricket Podcast, Jack, so choose carefully. Who is the best golfer at Gloucestershire County Cricket Club?
The best golfer is George Hankins. He plays off 2 or 3. But we've got a lot of guys that think they play off single figures. I am going to name them as well because they're not as good as they think they are. So Josh Shaw, David Payne, or Gareth Roderick, who used to be with us. George Scott's pretty good. But those three, they say they play off 6, but they're not. They're more like a 12. So I would like to call that out.
Fair enough. And I suppose I have to follow that with one final question for today's podcast. Let's say you had to trust one of those three guys with winning you £1 million to get a hole in one. Who would you choose and why?
Out of one of those three, Joshua, I would. I think he's pretty calm under pressure and he's pretty by the books. I think he would, you know, he'd measure out the wind, everything. He would take everything into account. So I reckon he's got the best chance.
Fair enough. And I suppose that does bring us to an end, not only to today's teammate segment, Jack, but of course to a fantastic podcast as well. We've thoroughly enjoyed it here today, talking all things Gloucestershire County cricket, of course, and a bit of franchise cricket as well. But just before we end today's podcast then, do you have any kind of just final words, anything to kind of close today's podcast on, social media channels to promote, for example?
No, I've got on Instagram, Jack Taylor 141, Twitter, not as active as I should be, but yeah, look, thoroughly enjoyed coming on here with you guys. I think it's great what you're doing. You know, giving a bit of an audience to some of the county cricket game. A lot of it's always international cricket and stuff. So I think it's great what you do. And I think it's only a good thing. I think podcasts for me have been quite, well, big part of my life over the last year or so, like various different fantasy football, cricket, other stuff. So yeah, I think what you're doing is great. And I'm sure any of the other boys at Gloucester would be more than keen to get on if you want them in the future. So thanks for having me.
Well, no problem, Jack. And thank you very much. That's very, very kind, of course. Myself and Joe, very thankful for that. But yeah, that does bring us to an end to what's been a fantastic podcast. Jack, we will leave your social media channel in the description on the podcast itself. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.